Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB, Club 1220. Tom Osman in the next hour with our executive producer of all things technical, Tom Hsu.
I love being executive producer. You make me feel like a big man here, Tom.
You know, there's an old bit. If you get promoted from producer to executive producer, is it is there any extra pay, any extra? No, not really, just a title.
Well, you know, in the radio industry, that's all we need.
That's
more
right.
Titles.
That's right. That's right.
And we're good.
Now, there's, in the world of corporations, which I might have a little bit of knowledge of, you're the associate director or the director or the senior director or the assistant to the senior director. You take a title and you can do a lot with it.
See, what I love is more responsibility at equal pay. That's what I'm looking for.
So you do the same amount of work, equal pay, right?
No, more work.
More work.
Same pay.
Well, a couple things I want to talk about before we get started. We actually have Bob DeForest in for hour two. Bob's doing a radio marathon. We did this last week with Stan, and we're trying to get our guest just to do 2 hours of straight radio. And Bob is—he's all jazzed up here, ready for hour two. Let's talk about Skip Loescher. Skip Loescher unfortunately passed away yesterday. Skip Loescher, if you don't know, was Channel 4's political correspondent. He did consumer reporting. And eventually was Channel 4's Washington bureau correspondent. And these were the days when Channel 4 or Channel 5 would have someone embedded in Washington to report straight what was happening and if our delegation of Congress had something to say or if there was something going on in the world, they were right there. And Tom, if you play, I pulled up the second tab for you right there. If you want to just play that, let's just get a little flashback here.
WCCO Television, Minneapolis, St. Paul. From the WCCO Television newsrooms in the Twin Cities and Washington, D.C., this is the 10 p.m. Report. With Dave Moore, Pat Miles, Skip Loescher, Mike Fairborn, Mark Rosen, and tonight's special report.
I'm Alan Cox. Tonight, a look at how the Twin Cities said goodbye to man.
The Washington Bureau, that was heavily promoted, along with the eye in the sky and the chopper and all the other devices, much like Batman. Batman had a lot of devices to get from place to place, and so did Channel 4 and Channel 5 and 11. Skip worked at Channel 4 for many years and eventually went to CNN, where he worked until he retired a few years back. And I know he'd been ill for a long time. Unfortunately, yesterday confirmed by a couple different sources, and Pat Kessler tweeted yesterday that Skip Loescher had passed away. One more tab there. The next tab over there, Tom. Let's listen to that.
And finally, Hal, tonight we are hoping that the hostages in Iran will actually get to listen to the Super Bowl game. The game was apparently tape-recorded by a Los Angeles radio station. It'll be fed by telephone to one of that station's employees in Tehran, and then Alex Payne will take the recording to the militants at the U.S. Embassy. And we hope then that the with other American journalists who have been expelled from Iran, other people there, the hostages, will get to listen to Super Bowl Sunday.
All right, and let's hope that next time the Super Bowl is up.
They will be here.
Let's hope they're here.
Yes.
And not there.
Amen.
That wraps up the 10 p.m. report.
Well, not quite, but that was Skip Loescher anchoring Channel 4. And Skip Loescher's stepson emailed me yesterday, actually. I had heard from another source that he had passed away, and a stepson emailed me from tcmedianow.com. And said, thank you for putting our dad in a great light. The grandkids would love to see our dad on the web, the website. That was pretty cool. I didn't expect to see get a response from his family, but that was great.
I was curious if you were friends with the family, but
never, unfortunately, never met them. I had reached out one time, and I think that Skip had some other things going on the last couple of years with health-wise, and unfortunately, we never did connect. But deepest sympathies for the Skip Loescher and his family. Passed away in Annapolis yesterday. It's October, and I don't know about you, but it makes me think of Halloween, apple cider, and monster cereal.
Yeah.
Are you scared?
Oh, all the time. I live in a constant state of fear.
You like horror movies, and I can watch them. I laugh at them. That's the unfortunate part about it. The ones Bob shows I get scared of, but the ones that have been made in color and the ones that have been made, you know, in the last 30 years, I laugh. Sure. But you know what I do get scared of?
I get scared more at the old ones,
yeah,
the black
too.
And whites. They're more scary to me. When you put color on it, like if you were to put color on Frankenstein, it wouldn't be quite as scary with the lightning and the shadows on the wall would all be in color. It doesn't have that dark, rainy, you know, dark look.
It has that child nightmare appearance to it when you see in black and white, the shadows.
That's it.
But something that's not scary to most of us is Monster Cereal. General Mills, our local company, in October 1971, the first two cereals in the line were introduced. Count Chocula, originally called Dr. Count Chocula.
Dr. Count Chocula.
Mm. And then the strawberry-flavored Frankenberry. In February 1972, Frankenberry cereal introduced a new dye that with marshmallows. Because that's usually what we ate. We ate the marshmallows. And we got the toy, ate about a third of the cereal, most of the marshmallows. This is great history here. In 1973, Boo Berry, the first blueberry flavored cereal was released, and Fruit Brute the following year.
Fruit Brute?
Fruit Brute.
I've never heard of Fruit Brute.
Interestingly enough, Fruit Brute was discontinued in 1984 and replaced in 1987 by Fruity Yummy Mummy.
I have a vague memory of the Mummy, but definitely Count Chocula, and I think Frankenberry was the butt of many, many jokes.
That's it, yeah.
And this is straight from the General Mills blog, so this is a credible source here. General Mills blogged about their cereal.
I have lined up, I think, a Count Chocula one for you.
Let's go with it.
Don't be scared. I'm the super sweet monster with the super sweet new cereal, Count Chocula.
Bethel, here's the super sweet new cereal, Frankenberry.
But I've got chocolate sweeties for monstrous chocolate flavor.
Well, I've got berry-flavored sweeties for monstrous strawberry flavor.
Count Chocula.
Frankenberry.
Hi.
Frankenberry.
Count Chocula.
Tom, I think you can pull up Boo Berry's first commercial, too, if you look.
Boo Berry.
Yeah, Boo Berry. I think if you look, scroll down there, you can see the first Boo Berry commercial because the voices. Yep, there it is.
And my favorite part, though, of Frankenberry is that his fingernails are actually strawberries.
Right. If you look at the Frankenberry box, it's strawberry fingernails.
Very intimidating, I'm sure. All righty, shall we?
Let's go.
Someone's come for a nutritious breakfast.
What?
Hello, my name is Boo. Let me finish. Boo Berry, my ghostly good blueberry-flavored cereal, Boo Berry, is part of this complete breakfast.
Thank you, Boo Berry.
Frankenberry's got strawberry-flavored marshmallows.
Count Chocula's got chocolate marshmallows.
But I've got blueberry-flavored marshmallows.
Frankenberry.
Count Chocula.
And Boo Berry.
Those are good.
I love that the complete breakfast always has the toast, the juice, the milk. It's a very elaborate breakfast built around these nutritious cereals.
Mm-hmm, sure. I never got a chance to eat any of these. I don't think I've ever had Chocula or Count Chocula.
I think I've had Chocula. I had Chocula.
My mom always made sure we had Cheerios or something healthy.
Well, good news. This is not a commercial. This is just from the General Mills blog that every October you can buy your favorite monster-themed cereals, maybe even at one of your local discount stores or Cub Foods or Rainbow. Every Halloween, Boo Berry, Count Chocula, Frankenberry, and this year, Fruit Brute and Fruity Yummy Mummy are both back on shelves.
I gotta look up what Fruit Brute looks like. That does not ring any bells.
He looks brutish. Let me warn you.
He looks brutish.
let's take a quick break, and when we come back, I am looking forward to having Bob DeFlores talk all about horror movies and everything else that Bob's done in his remarkable career here. So we will be back on Flashback Twin Cities here on KLBB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond back here with my special guest, Bob DeFlores. Bob, welcome to Flashback Twin Cities. First time on my show. You've done Stan shows many times.
Well, thank you,
first
Tom.
First time here.
It's a privilege to be on your show.
Well, we were just talking a little bit about horror films. We're talking about horror serials and horror films.
Right.
And I know we talked about this last hour, but a great thing to go to the Heights Theater and see these horror classic films on a big screen.
Oh,
and
definitely.
You can watch them in your house and in your living room, but there's just something about being in a theater and seeing that on a big screen. Even the print, it's not that DVD, Blu-ray print that unfortunately a lot of us now are you know, we think that if you see a movie with, you know, pure, crisp, clean, without any of those flaws, it's better. I still like to go see a movie, you know, with the actual theater experience.
Right. You get that little hiss in the background from the film.
We're having, on most movies, 300 to 400 people.
Mm-hmm.
Like we had almost 300 for Frankenstein on a Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
It's a work night for people to think, and all ages. This is what makes me feel good, is it's not senior citizen crowd.
Right.
There's college kids. I noticed some teenagers in the back. So this is what makes me feel good, is that the younger generation has a chance to see some of these and enjoy them and carry it on down the road. Because if that doesn't happen, then everything just seems to, you know, just be in the present. And I love things that are going in the present, but you have to preserve the past as well.
Well, I think there's two types of people. There's someone that lives in the past, and there's someone that embraces the past and lives in the future. On my website, tcmedianow.com, there are a lot of people that give me comments and say, I wish it was the way it was 30, 40 years ago. And in some ways, yeah, okay, we do, but the reality is, we're not going to go backwards. We have not discovered the DeLorean time machine yet that we're going to go backwards. We have to live in 2013, but the great thing is we can still bring these things to the past.
That's right.
and merge it in with the future.
That's right, and that's the beauty of it all, is to bring something back. Sometimes a movie that's been forgotten and nobody even has seen it, and you bring it to a Heights 1926 theater with the chandeliers and all the old architecture, and you show that in there, and it comes alive again, and it's just a wonderful feeling. When I leave there after the movie, people are talking to you in the lobby. They're in a good mood. They're wanting to wait to next Thursday to see the next movie, and it's just a wonderful experience. It makes you feel good. And it is just, and these are movie buffs now. When you do come up to the Heights, these are people that laugh out loud, applaud out loud, applaud when the logo goes on the screen, applaud at the end, and even stand sometimes and applaud. Now, where do you get that at Southdale?
No.
No?
No.
I'm not knocking Southdale. I'm just saying it's a different situation. But they're all really into film noir, you know, sci-fi movies. I mean, you can show The Thing up there or any kind of...
great movie.
You know, Came from Outer Space. You know, all those films, the audiences... If you don't get there, the movie starts at 7:30. If you don't get there by 6:45, you haven't got a seat.
We didn't do a great job in this country of preserving our movie palaces. And a lot of the great movie houses in Minneapolis-St. Paul, if you can probably speak this too, Bob, is they turn into more seedier nature in the 60s and 70s, and then they tore them down to keep the less desirable characters out of town. Then we were a lot, when urban renewal started, I'd say back in the 90s, all the theaters were gone and we had to rebuild some of them. But the Heights Theater is one of those few theaters in town. I'd say the Uptown, you know, down in Minneapolis. A couple that are left, but the Cooper's gone. I mean, all these great theaters are gone now.
Riverview is got a nice flavor to it. I always have thought, and I tell the audience before the show, first of all, I thank them for coming and supporting the films. But I said, where can you go in your hometown to 1926 theater and see Buster Keaton and the organist playing the score and just this wonderful evening? And it just isn't people like, I'll go to, I mentioned Southdale because that's where I go to the movies. But I'll go there and there's 20 or 30 people. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a full house, but there's no emotion. There's no, they get up and, oh, movie's over, let's go. These people are singing the songs as they're going out in the lobby. I mean, if there's music, and it's just wonderful. It makes me feel good because I'm hoping they get something out of it. It's not so much just an old movie, or here's a Dracula movie, you know, it's near Halloween. It's not that. It's that you dig out interesting information on the movie and tell them all the nitty-gritty and how the castle stood there for many years and was used in other Universal Pictures, that type of thing. And that's what makes it very special to the audience. And then they start thinking, And you know, you're referring to the past. One of the things I do like about the past, I know today we have all this technical world mm-hmm. where you can put you in Hawaii in back of you or put you in the pyramids or do anything you want. But as a kid, I went down to Paramount and I saw them building the sets.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw all these carpenters and craftsmen building a set for like a period movie, let's say, you know, like, you know, Moses or whatever. But you would see them. And here it was all in a soundstage, but it looked like you were out there in the real thing. And it was a city of people, cinematographers, lighting technicians. And what really gave me goosebumps is when I saw the cameraman, I forget what movie it was at the time. I was very little. My aunt took me down. And here the camera, they get, said, let's get going. And the cameraman started, and the boom comes down and starts coming towards the scene. Mm-hmm. And it just traveled across the soundstage and then went this way like a snake. And I thought, oh, my God, this is exciting. This is like a roving eye,
mm-hmm.
just picking up whatever it's supposed to pick up. So that's the kind of, that's what I like. There's more of a passion with me for it. Because I went to the theater 3-4 times a week, either by myself or with my father in Hollywood. Went to all the Saturday matinees, saw all the serials, all the cartoons, all the two-reelers, you know, Charlie Chase, Laurel and Hardy. You know, it was just a wonderful time. Now, I know, in a way, we can bring back some of that time. We can do a Saturday matinee again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, give the right information out. The kids might come, enjoy it. Chapter One, Captain mm-hmm. Marvel, or whatever, you know. This is the kind of stuff I think needs to be done, and in especially each city. Now, I've helped raise money to save the Hollywood, which is up near the Heights. That didn't go anywhere. We got to save the theater, and, you know, they can't tear it down now. And I helped on the Heights, did a lot of shows up there, and we helped Tom with the money to get her going, and then he has the Dairy Queen there, of course, and that went for saving the theater. But also, it's nice. I was the opening show at the Paramount in Austin, and that's a beautiful theater. And then I did a show at the Paramount in St. Cloud. So, you know, I love old theaters because that's what I grew up in, is these old theaters that they tore down many of them. And now we have, and I'm always saying, we don't need, it's nice to have a big movie palace downtown.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the neighborhood theater right. was where all the families went. You went with your folks, and you bought popcorn, mm-hmm. you saw, and it was a double feature, and it was a newsreel. See, that's
right.
what we're missing.
It was an event.
It's an event.
Have
that's
you,
it.
Have you been good. To the Uptown since they renovated it?
I haven't yet, and I'm going to get
very
down
nice.
There very soon.
Mm-hmm.
Very soon.
No, that was that was a great theater because it was one of the few theaters in town for a long time that actually showed what I'd call studio Hollywood movies.
Mm-hmm.
It would show independent films, and luckily now I think that the studios are getting a little bit more broader now in the kind of films they're producing. I think there was a period of time where it was all major blockbusters.
Mm-hmm.
But your point before about actually believing what you're seeing. I think part of the movie experience is being able to see something that you think could be real, but it's not. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know this is not
right.
real, but it looks
right.
real.
It looks real.
And I think that the computer-generated movie sets that we've had, mm-hmm. you know, George Lucas, I think, was pioneered this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, George Lucas originally made sets that looked real in
right.
outer space, and
right.
then he made outer space sets that look like computer-generated graphics, and that's been my challenge with a lot of sci-fi movies or even with a lot of fantasy movies.
Mm-hmm.
Is
they look empty.
We used to there's a little bit of a flatness to them. There's a little bit of mm-hmm. a coldness to them, and I still watch them, and
oh,
I will
yeah.
see them again, and I do enjoy mm-hmm. them. But there's my throwback to the past is I like to see things that look real and look physically real, even if I know that there's no way that this thing is flying in outer space.
That uncanny
right.
valley is just really strong
right.
for you. Do you know what that is?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, for those who don't, when something is created to look real, but it just doesn't quite reach that range where it is real,
mm-hmm.
you immediately notice it, and it bothers you, and you can mm-hmm. tell it's wrong.
Well, you know, and the other thing, too, is, Tom, is that because I grew up way back in the 40s and 50s, and it was the movie going experience was it. I mean, that was your big entertainment, you know, for your family. And it was special. What I try to tell people today when I go introduce the cast at the Heights is there are all these wonderful character actors. And a lot of them really don't get the credit they deserve. They're in the movie. They make you laugh. Oh, that guy. Oh, he's funny. You know, they don't even know his name half the time.
Yeah.
But what I like to do, sure, an actor's paid to be in a movie, or he's part of the stock company at Universal or whatever. But what gets me, you know, is when somebody's spent their whole life as an actor, and they've done such a wonderful job portraying whatever they do, I always felt like you have to give tribute to the character actors as well as the lead actors.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to a show, if Edward Everett Horton, that's a name I don't know if you're familiar with, but he was in a lot of movies, RKO movies. I mean, he made you laugh. He was funny. He was in Arsenic and Old Lace, you know, with Cary Grant. But these people, if I knew they were in the movie along with Cary Grant, that made you even more wanted to go. You have actors that you like, and if they're in the movie, you go, oh, gosh, I mean, not only got my favorite actor, but, you know, it's like Gabby Hayes in the Westerns.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's no Gabby Hayes. There's no character actors. There's actors playing a part of something, but you don't have those old good character actors that that I miss anyway.
I respect those character actors more because, I mean, I don't want to knock them, but like Tommy Lee Jones, phenomenal, but he never plays anything except Tommy Lee Jones. You don't even know his name in any movie. It's just Tommy Lee Jones being Tommy Lee Jones.
Well, he was Two-Face at one time.
Well, you know what? That's probably the closest to real acting he's done, though.
Our guest today, Bob DeForest. Okay. Bob, I want to talk a little bit about... Now, let's go take a step backward.
Okay.
Are you from Minnesota?
No, I'm from San Francisco, and then I was raised in Hollywood. My folks were in show business. My mother and father were Latin entertainers, and... my dad played guitar, my mother played the castanets and maracas, and they danced, and they played all the clubs all over the country. They played the Coconut Grove, the Chapman Park, big hotels around the country, and I followed them. And then my dad, being Latin from Costa Rica, was going to be cast for a movie because they liked his looks. He's tall, dark-haired. And they made their own clothes back then, real flashy-looking Spanish outfits. And he went to Paramount with my aunt, who was in the movie. She played in Tarzan, the Leopard Woman, and a lot of the movies, the Cisco Kid, not the TV series, but the Monogram series. And he said, nope, I don't want to be a movie actor. And so he left the line. He was just almost there to the door at Paramount, and he decided not to do it. So an actor named Tito Guisar, who was a Latin entertainer, got what he would have gotten if he had signed up, you know, with Paramount, and he became a big star in all the South American films, you know, like Carnival in Rio, those kind of movies they used to make back then. But, yeah, I grew up in Hollywood. When I had to spend a year with my mother when they split up, so many years, and a year with my dad, and that went on for 7 years. Then I moved to Kansas City. I lived across the street from Ozzie and Harriet when I lived in the in Los Angeles, and I went to school with Dave and Ricky Nelson.
Oh, wow, okay.
So then it was just a few years after that that I came to my mom's, and then went to high school there and decided to stay in Kansas City. She had moved to Kansas City.
What part of Kansas City?
It's actually Overland Park area of Kansas City. Or it was Prairie Village at the time. Then they moved to Overland Park. And then I went to high school there and the University of Kansas. And then I was an artist. I did murals. I did... brochures, I did all slides, you name it.
This had to be culture shock, though, from going from the West Coast, San Francisco, and Hollywood to Kansas City.
I know. Yeah, I know. Well, and that's where they played. That's where they played a lot. So that's where she met somebody else, got married,
sure,
and then settled. So I was looking for a home. I didn't want to travel into hotels around the country when I was little. And I'm glad I did that in a way. And then my dad, of course, had another partner for a while, and then my aunt, of course, inspired me about movies because she was in a lot of movies. And then my other aunt, my dad's other sister, was Harold Lloyd's secretary for 2 years. So everybody was kind of in some part of show business, and I was very shy back then. I'd go to the show and look up at the screen, see Fred Astaire dancing, and I'd think, oh, God, I'd love to go to a party and
to dance, do that.
dance like that, or I'd love to play piano like that and everybody's surrounding, you know. So it was a fantasy, fantasy world for me. And it still is. And, you know, if I get bored with something, I drag out some movies and I show them in my living room and kind of look back. And I remember most of the names, not, you know, all of them, because as you get older, you lose a little bit of your memory. I haven't gotten there yet, but, you know, sneaking up on me slowly.
Well, Bob's a very young man here, so don't be confused here, Bob. Don't let Bob's knowledge of the old classics fool you. He's a very young man.
Well, in my brain, anyway. Yes, right. I look at it that way. But I love all kinds of movies. I'm part of the Edina Film Festival every year, which is an indie festival. And, you know, there are a lot of, I'm not just saying young people, but people in the Twin Cities that have done some wonderful films. Mm-hmm. And so I like to see them all. I really do. And I like to see movies today. I miss the old stars. Of course, a lot of, you know, the only time we can see them is on the screen. Mm-hmm. Most of, you know, practically all of them are gone now. But, and to be able to meet a lot of them, and like Loretta Young and Bing Crosby, and help them and work with them, has always been, I never thought I would be staying in Bing Crosby's mansion with Catherine Crosby, and she'd be making breakfast for you. And, you know, these things just happen because you had an interest or had films.
It's weird where life will take you.
Yeah, just if you have some, like, they'll open the door for you. You know, you at least get in the front door. But getting back to how I got here, LRB Architects saw some of my drawings. Mm-hmm. And so they moved me and my family up here. I believe it was 1969. And I lived in White Bear Lake for a while, and I didn't know the city that well. Then I moved out near the airport after that. And then I was at LRB Architects for about almost 10 years as art director. And I did the murals, St. Thomas, and different places around the country. And then one day, Channel 5 called me up in 1969. And I don't know where they heard I had all these classic movies that I'd been amassing since I was living in California.
And when did you start amassing film collections?
Because I started actually in 1953 or 4. Mm-hmm. And back then they had camera shops, and you could go buy a little movie in a box. Some of them were called soundies, little 3-minute musical films that they played in a jukebox. You'd go into a nightclub, put a dime in, and see a movie, Louis Armstrong singing, just like a record player, mm-hmm. but a movie. So those were like $1.50 each, which was a lot of money in the 50s, believe it or not. Uh-huh. So anyway, I would save up. I'd take some of my lunch money sometimes and save it and get one soundie and then another one. Then pretty soon you have your own job and you can buy more. And then
Bob's very weak. He's walking in very meek and thin because he didn't have lunch all week to buy
his
movie.
That's it. You can tell right here. But anyway, I started, and everybody would tell me, even the Nelsons, mm-hmm. what do you want with all that old stuff? And I said, what do I want with all that old stuff? It's history. I said, you don't like Benny Goodman and his orchestra? And then finally, here I am in 2013, and everybody's saying, oh, gosh, you got Benny Goodman? You got all these bands, and you got all these soundies? And, you know, then they had me on a show called Dial 5, or Dialing for Dollars, I think, also.
It's on Channel 5 on KSP.
Yeah, and
they got wind that you had this big collection.
And they said, how would you like to be on whenever we have a movie personality or anybody connected with Hollywood? I said, fine. And so the first person I remember when I moved here, they called me up and said, can you be on in 2 weeks with Ginger Rogers? I said, great.
Sure.
I says, you know, my jaw goes down. Like,
you never met Ginger before. You never met Ginger.
Met Ginger before, but we went down the station, met her. I knew she was born in Independence, Missouri. And I told her, I says, I know you're from Independence, and I lived in Independence for a while. And we hit it off pretty good. And then we were on the show, and I introduced the clip. And usually I'd bring a rare clip, not mm-hmm. just any clip. And then you got to kind of know them that way. And then after the show, I said, nice meeting you, Ginger. About 8 or 9 years later, there's a big tribute in Hollywood, and they fly me out for that. And it's Ginger Rogers' tribute at the Maskers Club. There's all these movie stars, and I walk in, and I see her over in the corner talking to Joseph Cotten, actor, and I tapped her on the shoulder, and I said, Ginger, I don't know if you remember me, but We were on Channel 5 together, and she said, oh, it's Bob, isn't it?
Yeah.
She grabs my arm, takes me across the dance floor, and I thought, uh-oh, she isn't going to ask me to dance, I hope. And then she turns me around and says, Fred, I'd like for you to meet Bob DeFlores.
Wow.
And I'm staring I'm staring at Fred Astaire. And I thought, what do I say to Fred Astaire?
What do you say to Fred Astaire?
And all I could think of was, well, Fred, I'm a big fan. My favorite movie is The Gay Divorcee, where you do Cole Porter's Night and Day. Very shy, he looks down. Very shy. Says, thank you, Bob. I'm just a dancer. And I looked at him and I said, well, you know, Fred, I think you're more than a dancer. And he says, well, thank you. You're very humble. And he says, thank you. We go, it's like a job. We go to the studio. We do what we have to do. And I'm glad you enjoyed it. Very humble. And I thought, oh, this is great. I'm glad that
doesn't
think of himself as a big deal, you know?
The people that have done the most are usually the ones that usually remember it. I mean, they remember that they're just a person.
Yeah.
And I found that in interviewing, most people we interview here are quite humble also because they've had great success. But people that have had great success and have had wonderful careers, lots of fans, they know how they got there.
Right.
And they understand that.
Definitely.
Those that might have kind of missed somewhere in that line where they were maybe a drop in the water or you're... Those ones that don't think that film or TV or radio ever got the
ground.
Right,
they're a bigger deal and they never got what they were due.
Right.
I've always thought if you're pretty much yourself,
mm-hmm.
you don't try to be a put on or you don't try to be too brash. When you go out to Hollywood, if you're too brash or you're cocky or, you know, people don't like that. If you're nice and come across very classy and say, you know, hi, how you doing, Fred? I'll tell you what it led to. I'm sitting there talking to him about I have this wonderful tap dance archive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, tap dancers that you've never seen on film. And Hermes Pan, his choreographer for all the RKO, or most of them, RKO Pictures comes up. And I had talked to him earlier. And he says, Fred, I see you met Bob. Bob's got all these wonderful tap dance clips. Let's have a movie night up at your house some night. So what happens is that you know, and then the next thing you know, you're on an airplane going out showing Loretta Young a lost movie in her home. And then you go there about 8 times and just some wonderful stories connected with all these people. I mean, we could be here for 10 hours.
You stumble into being an expert. You collect things.
Yeah, I didn't do it. Nothing planned, you know.
I get the question sometimes. So why do you do this? If you look at my website, all these clips from commercials. I have very low art. It's all the mm-hmm. it's all the pop culture commercials,
yeah.
and news, and things that people probably want to forget. But they ask, why do you do it? And it's like, there's no good answer for that. Why do I do it? Because I enjoy it. And then eventually, okay. you know, people actually start kind of taking notice to it, and they also enjoy
mm-hmm.
it.
Sure.
And who knows, in 50 years, you might be the person they come to contact.
Right.
Like, can we get some copies of these old 1980s
right.
commercials?
That's already
no one else has them.
And Tom, I think what you're doing by, you know, interviewing a lot of people that, you know, worked on either with radio or TV and getting some of these early archival things that were, like when I was on Dial 5, I think I've got 4 or 5 of those. It's my segment mm-hmm. only. But with Guy Lombardo, with Fred Waring,
mm-hmm.
with Ozzie Nelson, the Ginger Rogers, and, you know, it was fun. I'd leave the station, I thought, oh my gosh, I just was there with Ginger Rogers, you know, and
your heart pumping the whole time. My heart beat pumping.
Yeah,
the whole
my
time.
Heartbeat was pumping, and it just you know. And actually, I have to say this: coming to Minnesota was the best thing for me because it's a very art cultural city. When they found out I had this collection or archive, it led to helping on the Golden Plump Chicken commercials. It led to helping to the Cemex commercials running down the street, all that stuff. It led to a lot of commercials. It led to a lot of documentaries out in California and New York, mostly musical things like Satchmo. And
are you referring to when the Golden Plump Chickens were going to war and battle? You found,
yeah.
okay.
Yeah,
all right.
yeah. I met with them. They'd never seen any newsreels
at
Fallon.
Oh.
So I took some down, and then they had a storyboard, and they drew what they wanted to see newsreel-wise, and then they had the chickens in a building over on I believe it was Lindale, somewhere on Lindale, or one of the streets over in that area. And what they did, they had a girl from the farm somewhere, come up from Iowa or someplace.
To train them?
In order to get them to stand up straight, she would take ether and put it on their nose. Not ether, but some kind of a...
Really?
Chloroform?
On their nose, and then set them up straight with a hat. And then the cameras would run.
So I have to ask a question. Now, this is cryptic, but there's the actor Golden Plump Chickens. Now, do they get pardoned, or do they have to go back to the farm?
I don't know. Okay. I'd hate to see what happened to them after that.
Let's take a quick break. We're back with Bob DeFloris after this next break on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond here with our good friend and guest, Bob DeFloris. Bob, we're talking about the films you provided for local stations in town. So if you haven't seen, if you don't know the name Bob DeFloris, you probably have seen his work or his labor of love of providing film and footage to commercials and even Channel 5. Stanley Hubbard, I think, gave you a call a few times, wanted some extra films, and you were his film archivist.
Film consultant. I got a lot of the old B mystery films and all kinds of westerns and stuff for the station. And most of my work is documentaries and Kennedy Center honors, when they honor somebody like from long ago, like Claudette Colbert, or I'll supply some footage that normally they can't find at the studios, or some rare appearances of her. And I've done Dizzy Gillespie, Kennedy Center, and I've worked on about four or five of those. But Hugh Hefner, the last year on PBS, the big documentary, I supplied footage for that. And then also Artie Shaw, that won the Academy Award many years ago, worked on that. And just a lot of different things. Ken Burns Jazz, Jack Johnson, Ken Burns, you get into everything. I've been working with Michael Feinstein the last 2 years on his Great American Songbook, supplying footage for that. And I've never had a website. I tell people, if you email me, I'm going to call you back in person and talk to you.
This is true.
I said, I will not type something back to you, because I can only type what you're asking me, and I can talk more if I'm on the phone with you. But for those that do use the computer every day, I think it's wonderful. And for information, I think it's wonderful. But I'm a people person. I just have to talk to somebody. And sometimes they'll call with a thought, and I'll tell them something else, and they'll change their focal point to something else that can go another direction. So couldn't do that by typing.
Nothing wrong with that. And I have to say, so we're talking about these films you provided. Yeah. I assume that KTCA was one of your clients you had for a while?
Well, I worked on a lot of shows over there, Lost Twin Cities 1, 2, and 3.
Film du jour?
Yeah, and Avenue that they just did. And
Film du jour aired right... So as a Generation Xer, Film du jour aired right after Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers. Mm-hmm. So you go from these shows, which in the early 80s I might have been watching, to Film du jour. So I watched all these really, really old classic movies when I was very, very young.
Yeah.
Only because it rolled in right after
That's probably
the
some of the stuff I got them. When I first moved here, they had me go over there and pick all these classic film movies. And it was fun. I wasn't really a super host or anything. I just talked like we're talking now. Mm-hmm. But I found out after you've been on television a while, and you get a copy of what you look like. That's why I did those, Dial 5 thing. But I thought, oh, my gosh, I'm shaking my head too much. Don't do that next time. Just hold your head better. And don't, roll your eyes around too much. Because, you've seen people that are pretty polished. Mm-hmm. They just get there and they talk and they look good and they're handsome or whatever. They pull it off. But with me, I had to learn by looking. And then I would correct myself. And then finally, like up at the Heights, even when I see 400 people, they say, do you want a spotlight on you? I said, no. I want to see their faces. I want to talk to them like they're in your living room. I want to see if they're getting excited about anything. I want to tell them something interesting so they'll laugh or do something. And I feel like they're in your living room. They're not. You're not a lecturer, just a stiff lecturer.
We've met a lot of actors, and one thing that we talked about actually last week was that when you assume that every actor enjoys the publicity and enjoy a lot of people being around them. When you're with a camera, with a microphone like we are right now, it's much different experience than if you're sitting among 400, 500 people and you have to be on.
Yeah.
And I think that people are surprised that actors or even, you know, TV anchors or radio personalities, they're very shy people, a lot of them.
They are.
And a lot
they
of them
are.
Don't even like to hear themselves or see themselves after they create
right.
a product.
Right, right. Someday I will show you, and you might have already seen these. Have you ever seen the Humphrey Bogart outtakes from the late 30s from his movies?
No.
Well, we always know him as the tough guy,
mm-hmm.
you know, the gangster type, you know, mm-hmm. or whatever. They tell him one of his lines is wrong, and he goes, "Oh, I'm really sorry." And I thought, where's the Humphrey Bogart, the tough guy? Where is he?
That's why he's an actor.
One of the things, if I have time, I don't know.
Oh,
if
we're,
you
good,
do
we're good, we're
mm-hmm. good. One of the things that's interesting, I have a romanticism about the old movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I meet like Loretta Young, I say, geez, what was it like to be in The Farmer's Daughter? It was just a job.
And that's.
And I said, well, what do you mean just a job? Well, like you go to work. We were part of the studio system.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd tell us to go on sound stage number 3 and do the drugstore scene. After that, go on sound stage 1 and do this. Whatever you got to do in there, and it might be different movies. And so I'm showing her this movie in her home called Taxi, which is her favorite movie. It's a 1932 mm-hmm. Warner Brothers film. She's very young, and she had tried to find it for years. That's how I met her. She knew I had it and went to her home. She had all these actors and everybody there, and we showed it. And she was just so tickled to see it because she hadn't seen it on TV then. It wasn't around like it is today. And it just made her evening. So what I did, I went back after I showed it and came back home. It was Christmas. It was snowing. I always get kind of sad at Christmas. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I just, the music, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had 2 prints. So I boxed 1 print up with a Christmas card. And I says, "Dear Loretta, this is your favorite movie. It's here's Merry Christmas to you and your family." Zipped it off to California. I get a 8-page letter from Loretta Young saying, "You're always welcome in my home. Next time you come out, I'll round up my brother-in-law, Ricardo Montalban, and my sisters, who are all in the movies, and we'll have a movie night." And, you know, it just, it's so adventurous. It's like one thing leads to another. And then this casting director, as he's taking me to the airport, he says, "It's too bad you got to leave today." I said, "Well, I got to get back home." "You don't want to have dinner at Mae West's house?"
Huh.
And I said, "Well," I said, "What am I going to do? My plane's leaving in a half hour."
Right, right.
But these things, they just happen. I never thought I'd be going to the Playboy Mansion.
There are never things you
50
can
times and, you know, and helping Hefner and all that, you know.
Now, is Hef a good guy? Is he?
He's a very good guy. He's very, let me just say this. I know you know him as the Playboy, the womanizer.
Yeah.
But on the other side, he gives to charities.
Right,
he's given
right.
$1 million to UCLA for film preservation. He's restored, I don't know how many movies, you know, I'm going to just guess, you know, 150 movies or maybe more, short subjects, usually musical things he likes. But he's done so much. He's a good host. Took my father up there. He introduces him to Mel Torme, introduces him to Robert Culp. My dad had never been up there before, and it just was a big treat. I go to all his movie showings. I'm more into that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite young enough to be out there on the dance floor.
Well, you know.
But anyway, it's really a treat, and he challenges you. If he knows that you're, like, I've been working with Bing Crosby and the family, and he'll ask you questions. If you have the answers, boy, you're in.
You're in.
Mm-hmm. If you stumble and, I don't know.
Well, then you're.
Yeah, well, but, you know, you're okay, but He loves to know.
He wants people that have the answers and are confident. You know, that's what
wants,
I'm guessing.
Yeah, he wants to people that are confident.
And real quick before we go, so you're working with the Bing Crosby's family. This is a really amazing thing you're doing. So you know Mrs. Crosby, and I assume.
Oh, listen, I've stayed in their home, that huge estate, and at night she'd knock on my door. I stayed in Mary Frances's room. And there's
who shot J.R., by the way?
Who shot? Yes, you're right. Okay. And she would say to me in her nice speaking voice, she says, "Bob, my darling, would you care for something to eat?" And I almost felt like answering, "Yes, my dear."
Cookies and milk, please?
Yes. You know, and so we'd go downstairs. She'd fix something to eat. We'd go up and be in her room in my pajamas watching DVDs of the Hollywood Palace shows. And then the next morning, going out for breakfast. I mean, it was like being in Wonderland. Then I come back to my little house near the airport, and it's like, you're like in Magic Land, and you think, geez, was that a dream? Or what was I doing up there? You know, it was just wonderful to be downstairs working on his film collection, which I ended up with.
That's all here now.
She gave me a lot of the things. Some of them had vinegar. They were getting, you know, the vinegar smell, which deteriorates the film. So I've got a lot of things. And then I helped him find things he didn't have. And then I spent the day with Bing showing him all these films. And he'd look up at the screen. He'd sing to the screen. He would call out all anybody that was in the picture. There's Father So-and-so. There's the comedian on my radio show. You know, he'd do all that stuff. And his back was hurting him because he had fell off the stage in Pasadena. And so his man...
Oh, with Bob Hope, right? Wasn't Bob Hope with him when he fell off?
Yeah, it was the big show there. And so his man of the house, who is British, says, "Well, Mr. Crosby might leave you at about 4 o'clock, so don't be offended." So the 4 o'clock comes, and I said, "Bing, we better be going." "Nonsense, you don't have to go, do you?" He says, and he takes me on a tour of the house, and he's singing all through the house and shows me his hats from the early 30s, shows me the rose garden. Okay, so...
Oh, we're good, we're good.
But anyway, those are things you never forget. And
he probably did 18 holes of golf the next day then, probably.
Yeah, well, you know, then after that, he headed to Spain, he wanted to go fishing. He wanted to know if I could go fishing with him in the San Francisco Bay. I pictured myself fishing with Bing Crosby.
I'm picturing Bing in the hat with the pipe in his pipe smoking.
And I can't even catch minnows.
Right. Well, then you'd be...
I'm right there with you.
Fish with Bing Crosby. And, two things. You got to talk... We have to get the Crosby Christmas specials back out there. Those were wonderful specials.
Yes,
those should be released to the public.
Yes.
And we could have used Bing for another 10 years. It's just so sad that he passed away when he did, because he could have been around 10 more years.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? Before we go, he was going to come up here to Stillwater. I had him coming up here because his mother was born here.
Really?
Yeah. And so he said, "When I get back from Spain, I'd like to come up to Stillwater." I said, "I'll pick you up at the airport, and I talked to the newspaper here. They were all excited about it, and then he died, of course, on the golf course.
Yeah, if you don't know, Bing Crosby actually died after playing 18 holes of golf in Spain.
Right.
In 1977?
Right, October 14th, 1977. And actually had a can of Coke in his hand. He was walking in back of the two golfers, and his heart exploded in his chest. He fell. He was dead before he hit the ground.
Well, that's one way to go. You know, there are worse ways than playing golf and having a Coke.
Yeah.
So. Do you think they would have said, "Bing, this is your last..." He would have said, "I'm going anyway," probably.
Yeah. So, and I think he was probably happy, you know, what better way to go if you're a golfer, you know, and that was your way. That and fishing he loved to do.
Did he play a good game, though?
Played a very good game, yes.
Very important.
Yeah.
Heights Theater, Thursday, we have...
Thursday, we're having Island of Lost Souls, 1932, with Charles Laughton and, oh gosh, it's got everybody in it. It's just a wonderful movie, by the way.
Heights Theater, Columbia Heights, Minnesota.
Yep, 7:30.
And next Thursday, we have Bride of Frankenstein.
Bride of Frankenstein, a double feature, and then also The Raven with Karloff and Lugosi.
Well, I think that Stan Turner and I think even Tom Osmond at Flashback Twin Cities might be coming to some of his appearances. So, Bob DeForest, Bob, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Tom.
We're going to have you on again.
Congratulations on what you're doing. I hope you keep it going and I'll get you some stuff that I have to add to your archive.
Thank you. Flashback Twin Cities. We'll be back next Saturday. This is KLBB Club 1220.